Hey, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Daily Caller Podcast for the 12th day of November 2019. 12th already, Tuesday. Monday just flew by, and we're already on the second day of the week. I'm Derek Hunter. I'm your host. Thank you for listening, downloading, pressing play, sharing, spreading the word, telling friends and family and all that good stuff. I love that you guys are my word of mouth. Well, you have to be. I can't be. I guess I could be my word of mouth. One wrong sentence just sends you off on a screwed up tangent. I love that you guys engage in the word of mouth and spreading the word of this show, because that's all we got, and we only grow because of you. So thank you for that. As always, you can email me, Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com. It's just that easy. No problem. No muss, no fuss, as they say. No giveaways this week. We'll probably try to get to a giveaway next week. But I already do have this week's interview in the can. Do you want to know who it is? Do you want to know who I talked to? I talked to him last Thursday. It was a embarrassment of riches last Thursday. Got Tom Fitton offered, by Judicial Watch out of the blue. They emailed and said, hey, he'd like to come on if you would like to have him on. And I said, I'd love to have him on because I've been pestering them for a while. So, boom, got Tom Fitton. That kind of screwed up the timing, but the other one is an author, and it's somebody you guys have been, a lot of you have been emailing me about. You should talk to this person. You should talk to this person. So I did. I talked to that person, and that person will be on the show on Friday talking about that person's book. Am I being gender non-specific enough? Am I just being a jerk and teasing? It is Lee Smith. Yes, that's right. Lee Smith and his big best-selling book will be on the show on Friday. Unfortunately, the book was such a big seller that Amazon was out of it, and I couldn't get it coming up. And I stopped at two bookstores on the way to the Daily Caller offices, and not, podunk coloring bookstores, real legitimate bookstores, and neither one of them had any in. It was selling that crazily. So we will be able to talk about the plot against the president with Lee Smith on this Friday's show. Well, you'll be able to hear me talk about it. I actually talked to him about it last Thursday. So there you go. Let that sink in and try and figure out that timeline, and good luck to you. Got a lot of things to talk about. See, I was afraid, because when you get two great guests offered to you in 1 week, you're like, I want to tell the world. And every time I tell the world, something screws up and I don't get any of them or anybody, or, somebody's sick or they got to go someplace. It just screws up. So it's been killing me to keep that secret. Now I don't have to keep it secret. So we got Lee Smith coming up on the show on Friday for the Friday interview edition of the program. Like I said, we got a lot to get to today, and we'll get to it directly. But first, a nice hat tip to our wonderful sponsor who stuck with us through thick and thin. So thanks to them, and thanks to you for patronizing them. Let's talk about Life Change Tea. It is a game changer. Since I've been drinking Life Change Tea, I've noticed I feel so much better, and I can't tell you how much more energy I have. And it's thanks to Life Change Tea getting that stuff out of me, letting me absorb the good stuff I'm eating. How does it work? Life Change Tea is a proprietary herbal formula. It's a gentle daily cleanse designed to rid your body of harmful intruders. Let's face it, food was different 60 years ago, minimally processed, free of pesticides, nourishing and healthy for your body. Today, not so much. GMOs, pesticides, herbicides, and heavy processing have depleted the nutrition from our food. It's no wonder you feel run down. You add to that all the stuff that's built up inside of you that blocks your body's ability to absorb the nutrition that's still in our food, and you begin to see the problem. That's why you need Life Change Tea. Try it for yourself. Go to getthetea.com now. That's getthetea.com. Get ready for more energy. I drink it every day. Got a gallon of it, fresh gallon, sitting up in the fridge. Life Change Tea is not available in stores. Go to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Enter promo code Derek at checkout. You get free shipping. Use as directed. Follow the instructions. Drink it every day, just a cup of it every day, and get ready for more energy. Okay, now get ready for a fecal storm, which you could probably get from Life Change Tea if you drink too much of it. We've got the impeachment hearings coming up, starting tomorrow. Oh, it's going to be the greatest show on earth. Every network is going to go with it live. It's going to be a massive, massive show trial. Everybody knows the outcome. Democrats have already decided that the president is guilty, and Republicans say, show me some proof. And Democrats say, we don't have to. We don't need your votes. It's kind of a sad thing. But before we even talk, well, I don't even know if we'll even get to all that stuff. There are some other things I want to talk about. Just because yesterday was Veterans Day. And I knew this was coming. We've had on the anniversary of D-Day, the 75th anniversary of D-Day, we've had the New York Times do a series praising the Soviet Union. And basically the liberal media was talking about how the Soviet Union really won World War II. We didn't do all that much here in the United States when we were, you know, when the fighting was really going on in Europe, in Eastern Europe, we were over messing around in North Africa. There are lots of reasons for that. History is pretty easy to understand if you just think about it logically. Unfortunately, far too many people are not trained and capable of thinking about things logically. So you end up with a situation where an entire political movement, meaning the Democratic Party, believes that the Soviet Union was the real heroes of World War II. Enter Veterans Day, 2011. And I thought this would come from the New York Times. I'm kind of surprised it didn't. I guess kudos to them for not coming up with this crap, which is really a low bar, but still. It was the Daily Beast this time. The Daily Beast. Their headline, 9 Reasons to Thank the USSR, : How We Got the Cold War Wrong. Yes, it's all our fault. Don't you understand how little the left thinks of this country? How much contempt they hold this country in. It's not the Soviet Union killed 50 million plus people. No. It's the United States that held them at bay and stopped them from annexing and absorbing and influencing more countries and killing more people. That 50 million number, by the way, is just within Russia. Just saying. The rest of the world, millions and millions and tens of millions more. Well, this piece is by Brian T. Brown. I assume the T is important, or else it wouldn't be there. Although I tend to find that most writers use their middle initials to make it sound more. It's the written equivalent of wearing glasses to look smart. If you put your middle initial in there, then everybody knows how smart you are and how official you are. I don't buy that crap. But Brian T. Brown is author of Someone Is Out to Get Us, A Not-So-Brief History of Cold War Paranoia and Madness. He's trying to basically say, we didn't even need to have the Cold War. The Soviet Union wasn't a threat. They wanted to be our friends. They were so good and loving to us. Again, this was run on and probably written for to commemorate Veterans Day. I'm not sure how you look at this piece and think this is to honor veterans, but hey, it's the Daily Beast. At least they didn't call for the execution of veterans, so that's something, I suppose. Mr. Brown writes, 30 years ago, one of the most historic DIY projects of all time took place. Berliners took apart the wall that had cut their city in half. Thus began the beginning of the end of the Cold War. It was a conflict suffused with fear, paranoia, and a whole lot of lies. This means much of what many of us learned in school about the struggle between the U.S. and USSR was very, very wrong. Here's the first buried truth. We fired the first shot. Yeah, we started the Cold War. It's all our fault. Harry Truman rushed to drop the atom bomb to end the war in Japan to prevent the Soviets from joining the battle in the Pacific. Joseph Stalin got the message. The nuclear arms race was underway. Now, the reason, there were a lot of reasons why we dropped the atomic bomb. One of which did have to do with trying to keep Russia out of it. Russia, on the other hand, was rushing to get into it because they saw that the end was near, and they wanted pieces over there. They wanted influence over the peace in the Pacific. Stalin was very imperialistic, and he had his eyes set on taking chunks of Asia. We weren't able to head him off at the pass, but by and large, we were able to cut him out from the negotiations with the dropping of the nuclear bomb. There was no real opportunity or chance or thought behind, in any serious way, behind Japan staying in the fight after we showed that we could destroy a city with one plane and one bomb, even though Russia had started fighting in parts of northeast China to try and get in on the fight. But that's so ridiculous to claim that we dropped it because we wanted to keep Russia out. I think that the official explanation is the true explanation. It was lose a million people trying to invade mainland Japan, which is just a series of islands, if in fact they were willing to fight to the very last person, or try these new weapons and see if maybe, just maybe, they'll act in a rational way and come to their senses, which we did. And they did. All right. Here's the first buried truth. But our enemy, he continues, the so-called evil empire was really a figment of our fevered imaginations. In fact, the people running the Kremlin were frightened frauds running a fundamentally dysfunctional state forever on the verge of collapse. It's not even... It's such a childish... two-second version of history that it's not worth commenting on except to point out how childish it is. Given this asymmetry, the Cold War rivalry was actually a mind-boggling waste of money and lives to wage an inherently lopsided contest with a preordained outcome. Now, he's saying that the Soviet Union was teetering on the edge. Now, the Soviet Union had its economic problems, and those were largely covered up by the fact that if you told anybody about it in the Soviet Union, you'd get killed or sent off to the gulag, something like that. Something absurd like that. But we knew that they were not a booming economy. You can't have a booming economy without freedom, without liberty. And the less free that an economy is, the less booming that it is. But to say that the Soviet Union was on the verge of collapse, it lasted until 1991. So if it was teetering on collapse, so all we had to do was sit around and wait for what? 50 years of oppression, and then it would finally collapse. Meanwhile, they're trying to spread their sphere of influence throughout the world, trying to get the domino theory, you know, let's take down this country, then this country, then this country, then this country, all in the hopes of isolating the United States, damaging the Western world to try and collapse it, to try and win on that front. It wasn't as though the Soviet Union was sitting within its own borders and minding its own business, and those pesky damn Americans, those Westerners, those NATO allies decided to come in and mess with them. That's not at all what happened. And if you lived through it, you know. The problem is that half the electorate did not live through it. Half the electorate, the millennials, had no freaking clue what this Cold War business was all about. They hear about it from liberal teachers and liberal professors, and they get garbage like you're getting from Brown here, where, oh, the Soviet Union wasn't really a threat. They're just misunderstood. We had differing worldviews, and that's all there really is. So the piece is called Nine Reasons to Thank the USSR. So I'm just curious, what are the reasons that this guy thinks we should thank the evil empire that killed more than 50 million of its own citizens? Well, one, a stunning sacrifice. On the Eastern Front, the Red Army suffered more combat deaths at Stalingrad alone than the U.S. armed forces accumulated during the entirety of World War II. Oh, well, well, then screw America. I didn't know that. Yes, I did know that. And the reason that the war on the Eastern Front was such a surprise, which is an important thing to remember, which Brown doesn't touch on, and why Hitler was able to inflict so much damage, was because that Hitler and Stalin had signed a non-aggression pact. See how that works? When you get in bed with dogs, you come up with fleas. Stalin did that because of his imperialistic impulses, his desire to capture more ground and gain more power for himself. That is completely ignored, and he's acting as though the Soviet Union was just sitting around sipping vodka and sewing scarves for the coming winter. No, they were on board. If Hitler had not been so arrogant in thinking that the Blitzkrieg could just march to Moscow with no problem, which they got pretty damn close, they would not have gone to war then. If Hitler would have waited until he had secured the Western Front to some degree and not stupidly, arrogantly tried to wage a two-front war, which thank God for arrogance, because God forbid how history would have turned out otherwise, the Soviet Union would not have attacked Germany. Germany had to pick that fight because they were buddies. They were pals up until that time. So I'm really sorry that the Soviet Union lost so many people in Stalingrad, the siege of Stalingrad. But part of that was because to Stalin, people, particularly his military, but all of his people really, were disposable. They did not matter. So if they're freezing to death or starving to death, and you could do something to alleviate that, well, screw it. What does it matter? If they die, you'll just send in more disposable people, wave after wave of disposable people. So while you can feel bad for the individuals who were used and abused by their government and how they were mistreated by their government, make no mistake about it, it was their government that did it to them, every bit as much as the Nazis did. Number two, what bomb, he says. The fight against Japan didn't conclude only because of America's atomic attacks. In deciding how soon to surrender, Hirohito and his war cabinet appear to have been more frightened of Stalin's 11th hour invasion than of Curtis LeMay's attempt to bomb the country back to the Stone Age. So Mr. Brown is expecting us to believe that the essential leveling of two major industrial cities in Japan itself wasn't going to deter the Japanese leadership. It was that the Russians had invaded Northeast China, occupied Northeast China. And, ooh, you know what? Yeah, they're blowing the hell out of our cities one at a time and could, you know, pretty much end our civilization inside of a month or two. But way off across the Sea of Japan, there is a Russian army that, given favorable conditions, could be here within a year. Therefore, we must surrender now. That's what he's having you believe. Upper Volta rockets, he says. Throughout the Cold War, the Soviet Union struggled to meet the basic requirements of food and shelter. For example, the USSR's desperate housing shortage could have been alleviated with taller structures, but the country didn't possess sufficient raw materials to supply elevators for apartments above five stories. Oh, so there were homeless people, so we should be grateful for that. I don't really know what they're trying to argue there. Charming betrayal. The most effective spy cell the Soviets ever had was made up of aristocratic Englishmen schooled at Cambridge. Additionally, multiple physicists working for Britain on the Manhattan Project were Soviet moles, and they provided Stalin scientists with blueprints for the atomic bomb even before it was used on Japan. In short, the greatest threat to U.S. national security during the early part of the Cold War may have been our closest ally. No, just because the U.K. had some spies, Russian spies in their midst, does not make the U.K. our enemy. That this needs to be said, that this person is trying so desperately to absolve the Soviet Union of any and all wrongdoing, lets you know how depraved and disinterested in reality so many of the so-called academic left really are. Number five is the real menace. Joseph McCarthy barely believed a word he said and found zero communists in government roles. Not true, too stupid to address. Number six, flawed gamesmanship. The domino theory was used first by Dwight Eisenhower to argue that if communist forces in Vietnam succeed, the contagion of Kremlin-supported regimes would spread to Japan, New Zealand, and Australia. This was a fallacy. Virtually all revolutions during the Cold War were homegrown and, in general, waged to overthrow colonial masters of all ideologies. No, the locals were used as tools by the local communist leaders who were aided, trained, and supported by the Soviet Union. But when you're addressing history, complicated history, in one paragraph that is just two sentences, you can give no real information. Yet the Daily Beast thought that this was newsworthy and that it must, in fact, be reported to the world. The rest of them are kind of ridiculous, and to be perfectly honest, they're stupid. But I really thought that something like this would come from the New York Times. The Daily Beast is a dark horse in that race, in the race of stupid, but kudos to them. They out-stupid the New York Times. They out-anti-American the New York Times, and they are now the reigning champion. Although I suspect the New York Times will be back in soon, but they are the reigning champion of trying to absolve one of history's greatest mistakes and failures, and the tormenting and murder and death and suffering of millions upon millions of untold human beings for ideological purposes. Congratulations, Daily Beast. I hope you're proud of yourself. Sadly, they probably are. I want to move on now. By the way, if you watch Dancing with the Stars, Sean Spicer was finally defeated. All it took was down to the quarterfinals or semifinals, whatever it was. He made it very far in the competition there on Dancing with the Stars. First time I ever voted for a reality show thing ever. The liberal media, including that piece in the New York Times I talked about last week, and the crusading of journalists all across the political spectrum, from the radical left to the far left, finally got Sean Spicer booted off of Dancing with the Stars. They're very proud of themselves. CNN's human potato Brian Stelter tweeted gleefully about it, because Donald Trump had tweeted in support of him and then deleted it and tweeted a congratulations on making it this far about Sean Spicer. And Brian Stelter, again, Mr. Potato Head, was all over it like a rash. That makes the number of times that Brian Stelter has tweeted about Dancing with the Stars and Sean Spicer 10 trillion times more than Brian Stelter has tweeted about or mentioned anything having to do with ABC News being exposed as covering up for Jeffrey Epstein, because the higher-ups there, for whatever reason, didn't want the world to know 3 years ago that this was perhaps the most prolific child molester in history, possibly because he was so well-connected to powerful Democrats. So good on you, Brian Stelter. His show is called Hypocritical Sources or something like that. It's on Sundays on CNN, and for those of you who don't know, since considering the numbers, CNN is the nation's airport punishment for whatever sins you might have committed in life. Sad, sad. He will be missed. Not Sean Spicer. He's not going anywhere except for home. I'm talking about Brian Stelter and his dignity. I want to talk now about Don Cherry. I'm going to try and stay. Look, there's going to be plenty of impeachment stuff this week as the hearings start on Wednesday. So Thursday and Friday's show is all going to be about impeachment. I don't want to do what I see sadly happening so much on cable news and in print, which is wild speculation about what might, could, possibly, maybe happen. That's not news. This isn't a news program in the sense that it delivers you news. It is a program where we discuss the news. And something that hasn't happened yet, and what could happen, it's worthy of note in certain occasions, but there's really nothing else to be known about it unless and until something actually happens. So we're going to wait until we learn something before we speak about it. Who knows? The whole thing could be uprooted. The Inspector General's report could come out. Who knows what'll happen? So we're going to wait and find out what does. Until then, that God knows there's plenty enough to talk about. And I want to talk about Don Cherry. Now, if you grew up anywhere south of the Canadian border, far enough away not to get Canadian broadcasting, you might not know who Don Cherry is, and you probably don't really care all that much about hockey. This isn't really about hockey, although it's in the context of hockey. I grew up in Detroit watching the CBC Channel 9, Hockey Night in Canada, all that stuff, with regularity with my dad and my brother. And that was before we had cable. We could get the CBC, and then they made sure to include it in our cable package because it was such a part of our, the culture in Detroit and in a lot of Michigan. Watched hours of curling on CBC. No freaking idea how curling worked. I watched hours of curling and would come away more confused than I was going in. But it was hypnotic. I couldn't look away. But I would watch a lot of hockey, particularly playoff hockey. I loved the CBC because they carried everything. It was always hockey on in hockey season and late into the night. Don Cherry is a former NHL coach. Very bombastic, flamboyant. Have you ever seen the dude dress? He's got the most uncomfortable looking collars in the history of shirts. But he was controversial because he spoke his mind. He was in favor of old-time hockey. Didn't really take a whole bunch of crap. Really sort of bombastic kind of guy. My dad loved listening to Don Cherry, especially when he disagreed with him. Because Don Cherry just told you what he thought. There was no ambiguity. He didn't sugarcoat it. Wrong a lot of the time. Really favored Canadian players and sort of American players who spoke English over the Europeans and the Quebecois. Thought they were squished, thought they played wuss hockey. My dad sort of thinks they play wuss hockey too, and he's not all that wrong. But on Saturday night, Don Cherry said something that got him fired after decades of being on TV. The Washington Post has this story, which, before I play you the audio, because you're going to sit there and you're going to shake your head, and yes, it's Canada, and yes, it's a private company, but it's indicative of what is happening to free speech in the United States in particular. This is a creeping bit of fascism. Demands for conformity or else. The Washington Post, it took two reporters to write on this. Matt Bonesteel, that's either like the coolest name growing up or the worst name growing up. And Ben Strauss. They write, longtime NHL commentator Don Cherry will leave the Canadian broadcaster Sportsnet after making divisive comments about immigrants on the air on Saturday night. Quote, sports brings people together. It unites us, not divides us. Sportsnet president Bart Yabsley said in a statement, following further discussions with Don Cherry after Saturday night's broadcast, it has been decided that it is the right time for him to immediately step down. During the broadcast, he made divisive remarks that do not represent our values or what we stand for, end quote. Now, you're sitting there and you're thinking, what in the hell did he say? What could he have possibly said? How do you offend a nation of Canadians? They just reelected a prime minister with at least three examples of being in not just blackface, but full black body, where he was wearing shorts in one of them and painted his legs black to go full-blown black body. What could he have done? Well, the Post continues in a very sympathetic piece for fascism. On the broadcast of Hockey Night in Canada, Cherry, an often controversial commentator, criticized immigrants in Canada for not recognizing Remembrance Day, the country's equivalent to Memorial Day. The remarks started a firestorm in Canada that ended with Monday afternoon's news that Cherry would immediately step down. Many Canadians wear small artificial poppies in the days leading up to Remembrance Day to commemorate military personnel who have died during the war. I'm not going to read you the quote, but I was speaking Saturday night during Coach's Corner, his intermission segment. Cherry noted that he rarely sees anyone wearing the poppies anymore. Where he lives or downtown Canada, both areas, the Post reports, have sizable ethnic populations. Ooh, ethnic populations. Is Canadian not an ethnicity? Or I don't understand. Where do we draw the line? There's white people and everybody else. Now, is Canada suddenly becoming off-white? No, it's not. It's the snowiest country. But I want to play you what Don Cherry said. Now, at intersections in Canada leading up to Remembrance Day, there are people out, just like there are people out collecting money for whatever charity at various intersections. Or on the streets, they're selling these little poppies to benefit veterans. That's what he's talking about. Every year, I remember Don Cherry wearing these big, kind of ugly, obviously fake poppy flowers on his lapel. It has been a part of him for a long, long time. And he's been grousing about this for a very long time. Now, on Saturday, Don Cherry said what you're about to hear. Now, listen closely, because what has offended people, you're going to have to try and figure out what it is, what the racist comment is, because it could easily be said just about anybody who's moved to Canada or even just young Canadians. The point is that what he said is nothing. It's part of the outrage cancel culture that this country has created and exported. The American left created this, and now it's spread. Well, maybe the Chinese or the Russians created it first, and we just took it up. We don't know, but it is a tool distinctly of the left that says anybody, anyone who for any reason, even just a little, strays from our orthodoxy must be destroyed. Don Cherry was not a politically correct guy. The left had had the long knives out for him for some time. That of all the things, and I'm not going to recount all the things that Don Cherry has said over his career, but of all the things that Don Cherry has said, believe me, there have been some offensive things. And so what? Adults should be able to handle it. That this be what takes him down should scare the hell out of everybody, because while this is north of the border, this could and will and has happened south of the border. And with every scalp they claim, no matter where they claim it, these little fascists become more and more emboldened. Listen to Don Cherry setting up a clip. It's a package. He went to a Canadian cemetery from World War II over in Europe, full of people who Canadian soldiers, a lot of Canadians died fighting in World War II. It's an old package, but he runs it every year in the lead up to Remembrance Day. And he's talking about the importance of poppies. I don't play that part of it. It's unimportant, but that gives you the context of what he's trying to set up here. And he's saying he's mad. He's not seeing the support for the Canadian veterans like he used to. That's the gist of what he's saying. See if you can spot the offensive part of what Don Cherry said that got him fired after more than three decades on television.
I was talking to a veteran. I said, I'm not going to run the poppy thing anymore, because what's the sense? I live in Mississauga. Nobody wears, very few people wear a poppy. Downtown Toronto, forget it, downtown Toronto, nobody wears a poppy. And I'm not going to. He says, wait a minute. How about running it for the people that buy them? Now, you go to the small cities, and you know those, the rows on rows, you people love, you they come here, whatever it is, you love our way of life, you love our milk and honey, at least you could pay a couple of bucks for poppies or something like that. These guys pay for your way of life that you enjoy in Canada. These guys paid the biggest price. Anyhow, I'm going to run it again for you great people and good Canadians that bought a poppy. I'm still going to run it anyhow.
Love you for it.
Now, did you spot the offensive part? Did you spot the part that should have had a guy who'd spent more than 30 years commenting on hockey and became an institution in and of itself? Did you spot the part that should have gotten him fired, that did get him fired? I bet you didn't, because it's so incredibly stupid. It was right there in the middle. It was you people. You people. Those two words, you people got Don Cherry fired. Oh, he's talking about immigrants. Oh, no, he's talking about you people. He called immigrants you people. Yeah, he said, you people, you love that you come here, whatever it is. You love our way of life. You love our milk and honey. At least you could do is pay a couple of bucks for poppies or something like that. These guys paid for your way of life that you enjoy in Canada. Calling or saying, you people, which could have been referring to anybody, including young Canadians who are just as young and stupid as young Americans and as left-wing as young Americans, that was a bridge too far. Now, you heard Ron McLean, the co-host there, say, and God bless you for it, for running the thing. He has since issued a statement, probably pressured by his bosses at Sportsnet. His statement was, Don Cherry made remarks that were hurtful, discriminatory, which were flat out wrong. I sat there, did not catch it, did not respond. Last night was a really great lesson for Don and me. We were wrong, and I sincerely apologize, and I want to thank you for calling me and Don on that last night. Yeah, isn't that lovely? Isn't that lovely? They browbeat. Now, Ron McLean has been on for at least 20 years, probably 30 years, on Coach's Corner on the CBC. The company Sportsnet released the following statement. Don's discriminatory comments are offensive and they do not represent our values that we stand for as a network. We have spoken with Don about the severity of this issue and we sincerely apologize for these divisive remarks. A. Bart Yabsley. Yabsley? Yabsley, president of Sportsnet. Well, then the social media pressure, the little Nazis with their Twitter accounts got even more upset. And then they finally had to fire Don Cherry because of the words, you people. You people. To hear, you know, the left always talks about there are dog whistles. The right is using dog whistles and code words and so on and so forth, and it's all racist and everything. If all you hear is racism, you're probably the racist. If you hear something like you people and you immediately think of brown people, if you think of things like welfare, and you immediately think, well, he's using code words for black people. Well, the person who is suffering, if you will, the racism, is you. People talk like normal people. Most people couldn't give a good pile of damn what somebody looks like, what race they are, what ethnicity they are, whatever. They care about what type of person they are. In the left circles, they don't care what kind of person you are. Jeffrey Epstein's perversions were well known. They were well known for a long time. He was, remember, convicted back in 2008. And when he returned home to New York after his pseudo-prison sentence in Florida, he was greeted by Chelsea Handler, George Stephanopoulos, and Katie Couric, and Woody Allen with a private dinner in his Manhattan townhome. They knew what he was gone for. Nobody came to that dinner going, hey, Jeff, haven't seen you for a while. What have you been up? What happened to you? What'd you do? Where'd you go? Where you been? Nobody did that. They knew exactly who he was. They likely knew who, if you were invited to that dinner, you likely knew who he was long before he was ever convicted of anything. That you would show up to that dinner tells as well, more about you than anything else. It's just a coincidence, I'm sure, that George Stephanopoulos's network then a few years later spiked a story about Jeffrey Epstein's career of child molestation, claiming they didn't have the story, and because, even though, in fact, they had the story. They had one of his victims on record, on camera, telling the story. This is who the left is. They don't care what you do in your private life. They don't care what you do in your public life as long as it's with them. If it's for the cause, they're down with it. You can go ahead and commit murder. You can go ahead and support tyranny or terrorism. The new district attorney in San Francisco Yes, they just held an election over the weekend that was finalized in San Francisco to elect a new district attorney. He is a guy named Chesa Boudin, however you pronounce it. He is a very progressive guy who has sworn that he will not prosecute prostitution, solicitation of prostitution, drug use, sleeping on the streets, crapping on the streets, pissing on the streets, nothing. He is not. He hasn't changed the law. The City Council of San Francisco hasn't changed the laws to make these things legal. The new district attorney has just announced that he doesn't care what the law says. He's not going to enforce it because that's now the job of a prosecutor. Well, it turns out that Chesa is the son of two cop killers. His parents were sentenced to long prison sentences. His father is still in prison. They killed two police officers and a security guard as part of the Weather Underground in a robbery when he was an infant. You have an infant. You imagine having an infant son, and you go off and you say, yeah, robbery is the way to go. Let's go do it, and we'll shoot anybody who stands in our way. Well, Chess's father, like I said, is still in prison. His mother got out a while ago. She spent a couple of decades in prison, and she went on, of course, naturally, to be a professor at Columbia University because liberal terrorists get tenure. That's the way academia works. You need to come up with homeschooling college. Something has to change about this system. At least cut off all federal funding, including federal student aid to these places. Maybe make them dip into their multi-billion dollars of endowments. Well, when Chesa's parents went to prison, and I'm not saying Chesa is guilty of anything. No one is responsible for what their parents did. But it's telling that when his parents go away for decades in prison for murder, he's sent to live with a couple in Chicago who raise him as their own and indoctrinate him in the manner in which his cop-killing parents would want him indoctrinated. That sweet, innocent couple in Chicago was two people named Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn. That's right. The terrorist friends of Barack Obama, the home in which Barack Obama launched his political career. In the meantime, after getting his law degree and so on and so forth, Chesa then spent a little bit of time being an interpreter for none other than Venezuelan dictator Hugo Chavez, socialist dictator. When Hugo Chavez died and they buried his bloated, rotting corpse in one of those giant red shirts that he wore all the time, his daughter became the richest person in Venezuela. Multiple billions of dollars did Hugo Chavez's daughter have. Where do you think that money came from? I don't believe that Hugo Chavez was rich before he went into so-called public service, and I don't believe that the presidency of socialist Venezuela paid all that well to be able to save up multiples of billions of dollars to give to his daughter. No, that money was ripped off. In the name of socialism and in the name of the working people, I'm sure. It's just telling that Chesa, the new San Francisco district attorney, has all of these little connections and this platform. He vows to spend more time pursuing police officers for alleged wrongdoing than the people who actually do wrong. That's the priority. If I were a police officer in San Francisco, and or if any police officers in San Francisco are listening right now, I would try to get the hell out of there as quickly as humanly possible. I don't know if you can transfer to another department. I would recommend you leave the state because stupidity will spread and bleed out from there. If you thought San Francisco was lousy with human feces and spent heroin needles already, you ain't seen nothing yet. the man in charge of enforcing the laws has decided those laws will not be enforced. It's actually the antithesis of what democracy looks like. It is one person dictating what will be against the will of the people's representatives who passed laws that he's supposed to enforce. It's, again, another form of fascism. The word is being overused a lot lately, by me included, but that's only because it is the most appropriate word the English language has come up with so far. So yes, fascism is creeping across the Western Hemisphere in the formerly free nations of Canada and the United States. Now, Canada doesn't have the protections of free speech that we do, but nothing is stopping this mob. They get a little taste of blood, and they will seek and destroy. And sadly, companies are either run by social justice warriors, or they cave to them, thinking that somehow, I guarantee you, look, if you listen to that Don Cherry quote, and you happen to have your little dog ears that hear the dog whistles and hear all the secret codes of, oh my God, he said, you people. The odds of you watching hockey night in Canada are slim to none. The odds of you liking sports or competition of any sort is thin to none. It just doesn't happen. People like that don't enjoy sports. They don't, unless there's no keeping score. They'll maybe watch a good backgammon match or something like that. They'll watch people play chess and act like they understand what's going on, but they really don't. They don't have the intellectual capacity of it. So again, a company is appeasing a group of people who don't watch their product, who don't consume their product, at the expense of people who do, because Don Cherry was wildly popular in Canada. So the angry left that just reelected Prime Minister Blackface is upset and got the scalp of a guy who said, you people, when talking about people who are not grateful enough for the service of Canadians who died in wars defending their freedom. Simultaneously dishonoring every single one of those Canadians who died in wars defending their freedom. Speaking of the military, yesterday was Veterans Day. Politicians, of course, always seek to exploit that and give their little speeches. No party is immune from that. It's an opportunity to get in front of some cameras. But one part of one of their speeches kind of caught me as a little bit weird. It's from Mayor Pete Buttigieg. Mayor Pete was given a speech about Veterans Day and about veterans on Veterans Day. And his priorities are, I would say, not necessarily the priorities of the military, nor the priorities of the country, or nor really the priorities of anybody except for 0.02% of the population. Now, he gets tepid applause here because he's speaking to a radical leftist crowd. But listen to Mayor Pete's priorities on Veterans Day this year.
We still have to banish bigotry from our military. So that means ending the exclusion on coverage for transgender medical treatment, including surgery, and lifting restrictions that unfairly affect those with HIV.
So according to Mayor Pete, our military is a hotbed of racism and homophobia and discrimination right now. That's what we want in a commander-in-chief, somebody who thinks that our military is not the best among us, not the bravest among us, but a bunch of bigots who are out to get them transsexuals. We got to make sure that, and one of his priorities, what is it? The military must pay for sex reassignment surgery, sex changes. That's a priority of the military. Now, those surgeries are very expensive, wouldn't you think? The military has to pay for it? Really? So how many people would then join the military to get that surgery and then say, oh, no, I was a conscientious objector. I couldn't possibly serve in this capacity, and move on. just the way that a lot of people go to prison. Sadly, it's seriously an industry now. People go to prison and say, oh, now I'm a woman, and I demand that since the state is responsible for my health care, that they provide me with a sex change operation. And courts are routinely ruling that, okay, you win. Congratulations. Taxpayers get to foot the bill for this. Now, you go to the military and you want to get into all the social engineering that's going on in the military, all the BS garbage that is being rolled into the military by Barack Obama. It's evidenced by James Hassan when he was on this show and his book. And you begin to see that the liberal priority for the military might not be readiness. The liberal priority for the military might not be the defense of the country. The liberal priority for the military might just be a radical social justice warrior agenda. And you begin to think, if you play this out in your head and you think this through, that that might not be a good thing for this country. That the military should be removed from all this crap. That there are more important things that the military has to deal with. But not according to Mayor Pete. It is a priority. We must root out the bigotry. The bigotry of what? Taxpayers not wanting to foot the bill of tens of thousands of dollars for sex change operations? Maybe making the military's priority the priorities that should be the priority of a military, such as defending the country, defeating our enemies. No wonder we can't win wars anymore. No wonder we play to a tie. This is not just Mayor Pete. It is the mentality of the left, which, as we've learned in the Trump administration, liberals have metastasized themselves throughout all of our government in the permanent bureaucratic state. The military is no different than the bureaucracy at Housing and Urban Development or Health and Human Services. People get entrenched in there, and they are radical leftists in a lot of cases, and they stay there for their whole careers. They get authority. They get the ability to set policy, and they end up implementing crap like sex change for soldiers. And by the way, soldiers with HIV status is now a thing that we have to worry about. Why is that? Why do you think people with HIV might be restricted from certain positions in the military? Might it be because it's a communicable disease that is transmitted through blood? Might it be that, and the desire of wanting to keep people from having to be concerned that, oh, Private Johnson is HIV positive, and maybe if he's injured, that could cause some concern. Maybe you could spread the disease. Now, I know that the left wants you to believe that HIV is now just fully managed. It's just an inconvenience, like the cold. You get it for a while, and then it goes away. Not always. Not always. We aren't there yet, and I don't think while they wanted to decriminalize the wanton spreading or exposing sexual partners to HIV without disclosing that you have HIV, and they really have sought to decriminalize that across the country. Now, in California, it's not a crime to have unprotected sex with someone and not tell them that you have HIV. And if they get it, well, it's just an oopsie. Take your pills and hope that you're one of the lucky ones that this cocktail works for. By the way, you're also on the hook for all the money that it's going to cost you. You can't sue somebody over that either. You might not want to bring that into the military, but Mayor Pete doesn't care. He's pandering to the alphabet people, as Dave Chappelle put it. These radical lefties, the LGBTQRSTUVWXYZ gang out there that doesn't really give a damn about anything except bullying their way to getting what they want. Well, man, Mayor Pete is their guy, at least until Elizabeth Warren hears about what Mayor Pete is promising, and then suddenly she will be promising it too, because nobody will outpander Pocahontas. Nobody. But I find it interesting that in his Veterans Day speech, a veteran, as the left always, you know, Mayor Pete's a veteran. They They always remind us, doesn't seem all that interested in actually taking care of our veterans. They're more interested in advancing a liberal agenda. Okay, last story, I think, for today. Kamala Harris, not having a good time. Her campaign is cutting people all across the country. They're basically pulling out of California, which is her state, which is kind of funny and telling. She's pulling out of South Carolina. She's pulling out of New Hampshire. She's betting all her money, what dwindling money she has left, on Iowa. And she'd put a lot of effort into New Hampshire. Iowa and New Hampshire will weed the field rather significantly. But I thought it was kind of funny that there was a poll that came out yesterday. We'll get to in a second. But to set the table, I want to play a little clip of Kamala Harris after the second Democratic debate. If you remember the second Democratic debate, this is the one where Tulsi Gabbard went after Kamala Harris a little bit, attacked her for not being ready, for a whole bunch of things. And afterwards, she was asked by Anderson Cooper about the attacks from Tulsi Gabbard on her. Her answer was pretty funny, especially now in hindsight, considering the news I'm about to tell you. She said that, well, Tulsi, she's desperate. I expected to be attacked by somebody who's desperate. She declares herself a top-tier candidate, which she was not really ever at the time, or at all, really, throughout this race. But she declares herself a top-tier candidate and then attacks Gabbard, dismisses Gabbard, I should say, by saying, you know, she's polling at 0 or 1%, and you got to expect that from, there's a little bit desperation there. You got to expect attacks from people who are polling so low, they're trying to make a name for themselves. So before I tell you the new information, which you can probably figure out, let's stroll down memory lane and listen to Kamala Harris talk about Tulsi Gabbard and her attacks on her after the second debate.
Well, I mean, listen, this is going to sound immodest, but I'm obviously a top-tier candidate, and so I did expect that I would be on the stage and take hits tonight because there are a lot of people that are trying to make the stage for the next debate.
Right. Yeah, for a lot of them, it's do or die.
Well, yeah, and especially when people are at 0 or 1% or whatever she might be at. And so I did expect that I might take hits tonight.
I'm obviously a top-tier candidate, and, you know, when she's pulling at 0 or 1%, you've got to, well, what a difference a few months makes, and how those words come back to haunt. National Review has the story. The latest Quinnipiac poll of New Hampshire shows Joe Biden with a narrow lead in a close four-way race. Biden at 20, Warren at 16, Mayor Pete at 15, and Bernie Sanders at 14. The Real Clear average of New Hampshire polls similarly shows a tight race with Biden and Warren tied at 19.7%, then Bernie at 19%, and then Buttigieg at 11.3%. As for the bottom tier, Quinnipiac finds Kamala Harris posting her worst polling results of 2019 in New Hampshire a couple of weeks after the California senator fired her campaign staff and closed campaign offices in the state in order to direct her diminishing resources to Iowa. Meanwhile, Tulsi Gabbard, now this is funny because this is a bit of karma. This is why I played that audio for you to set this up. Meanwhile, Tulsi Gabbard is showing a pulse at 6% in the Quinnipiac poll. The Hawaii congresswoman has the support of 10% of independents, but only 1% of Democrats who intend to vote in the primary. Up there, it's an open primary system, so independents can vote in whichever primary they want. There's really nothing to vote for in the Republican side, so they're going to go and vote in the Democratic side. So you have Tulsi Gabbard. Remember, she was the one who was desperate and attacking Kamala Harris out of some form of perverse jealousy just a couple of months ago. Tulsi Gabbard at 6%. Andrew Yang at 4%. He's the one promising everybody $1,000 a month. Amy Klobuchar, 3%. Tom Steyer at 3%, the billionaire who just entered the race. He's already at 3%. Then you look, it's got Senator Bennett, who I bet most people would assume has already dropped out of the race, at 1%. Cory Booker, who I assume most people would guess has already dropped out of the race if they knew he was in the race to begin with. And then right there, Harris, Kamala Harris, 1%. Now, remember, she was a top-tier candidate and attacking Tulsi Gabbard because she was attacking Kamala Harris only out of desperation to try and make a name for herself. Well, it turns out that maybe Tulsi Gabbard was onto something there, Kamala. Tulsi Gabbard seems to have figured out the way to success is not sitting back and looking down your nose at everybody else running for president or the people who happen to be polling below you at any given moment, but maybe going out there and making a case for your candidacy rather than running away and not giving serious answers and then patting yourself on the back for your supposed top-tier candidate status. So congratulations, Kamala. You really screwed up. You've proven yourself to be a god-awful, terrible candidate in a field of god-awful, terrible candidates. That's the Democratic field is god-awful, terrible candidates. And Kamala Harris is losing to everyone in the race. Marianne Williamson might still be in the race. Maybe she polls lower than that, but I can't think of anybody else. I guess John Delaney's still in there, too. Yeah, see, the people you have to rack your brain to remember, do they still exist in this or not? Those are the only people Kamala Harris is beating in these polls. The old saying, watch careful on who you step on your way up the ladder, because they're the same people who are going to be stepping on you as you go back down. Kamala Harris, congratulations. Anyway, that is all the time we have for today. You can email me, Derek, at dailycaller.com. The website is patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast if you want to help out. I think I'm making improvements already to the program thanks to your guys' help. So I appreciate that, and any support is, as always, appreciated. Did I give the email, Derek, at dailycaller.com? Well, I give it again. Whatever the case, we'll be back tomorrow with another exciting episode, and I'll be back on the radio tomorrow at 9 a.m., which means I got to get to bed. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is going to sound immodest, but I'm obviously a top-tier candidate.